advertising did. This is one of the most recent projects that we completed. It was done again by a team of us that included obviously soil scientists, but also graduate students and even undergraduate students and multimedia specialists and education specialists. So it was a team effort. And we did it because we wanted to enhance the accessibility of the soil monolith collection that we have at University of British Columbia. As we all know, in this room, soil monoliths are display models, and they've been used for now over 100 years in terms of education, especially when it comes to soil classification and identification, just demonstrative purposes, and also some of the soil monoliths are used in various kinds of studies. But any soil monolith collection, even when it's on display, display of a best organized museum collection, has relatively limited access, especially in comparison to what internet or web-based educational resources are offering. So the objective of our project was to develop an open access, which in plain English means no password protection, available to anybody who has access to internet, a web-based teaching resource to enhance, as I said, usability of the soil monolith collection that we have at UBC, which happens to be the second largest of its kind in Canada with 197 monoliths in our collection. The biggest one is at University of Alberta in Edmonton. At the bottom of this slide is URL for this particular website, but if you go to the URL that's on the sheet that's been distributed from that mother website, you can access any of the projects that our group has developed, including this one. And again, I'm using captions because we don't have the internet access, but I'll show you some of the features of this particular site. Oops, I went the other way around. So if we are on internet, and if we clicked on that URL, this would be the homepage of this particular website. It has two features. It has the navigational menu on the top, as any or most of the websites nowadays have. And on the left-hand side on your screen, you have a content menu with 10 tabs or menu bars, each of them corresponding to one of the 10 soil orders that we have in Canadian soil classification system. In Canadian soil classification system, the broadest taxonomical category is called order. It's most general category, most inclusive. Then it's divided into grade groups, which are then subdivided into subgroups. Subgroups are then subdivided into families, and finally families are subdivided into soil series, which is the most specific taxa or classification category in Canadian system. Because this particular educational tool was developed in BC, we used the soil map of BC to reinforce the concept of ten soil orders that we have in our Canadian system. So how we organized our monolith collection goes like this. Let's say I'm on the internet and I clicked on the first soil order on the list, Brunisol. On this page that now opened up, you get a brief description of that particular soil order. You also get a photo of usually a landscape that's most typical for a particular soil order, and you get a list of grade groups between that soil order. On this side, you have sub-menus that opened up that represent each of these four grade groups in this particular order, and numbers in brackets represent how many soil monoliths we have in each of these grade groups between this soil order. Additional useful thing that any open access or not open access, web-based teaching tool that offers to you is big flexibility and linking lots of things. So what we've done here, we provided links from this page that talks about Brunisolic soil order and its feature to a couple of other websites, and I will not go to them, but I hope you will browse through our websites when you go back to your hotel room. So if you click here, or if you click here, you will be taken to another website where we have video clips of soil scientists in the field that that are describing soil identification process and how you go about classifying particular soils. So students who is using this teaching tool has additional features on their disposal. So it's not just what they see on this particular page. If somebody now wants to see a specific monolith in our collection that belongs to this order and Sombric Brunisolic grade group, they would click on this, on the Sombric group, and this page would open up. So now here, on this side, we have a list of three monoliths that we happen to have in this grade group. And if you click on this one, you are taken to the page that will look like this, where you get specific details on that particular monolith that happens to have code 101. This is the name of the subgroup. This is the reinforcement on classification system, so to which order the particular monolith belongs, which grade group, which subgroup. And soil series. Then you have a list of horizons that are present in that particular soil monolith and associated thickness for each of the horizons. What's the parent material on which soil formed and your geographical location where the monolith was excavated. And then you can click on the photo. You are taken to another page which would look like this. Here you get a scale in centimeters next to the monolith. This on its own is nice, but it's not particularly useful on internet, and I can't do this step here. You can click on this photograph and you can get a very good magnification of the monolith in question, because all of these photographs that are posted on the website are extremely high resolution, so you can scroll through the monolith up and down. And you can see details like coarse fragments, root fragments. You can even see details like individual coarse sand particles. So that allows you in-depth viewing of every single monolith that we have in our collection. A couple of words just about things that are pretty standard and that are posted on this navigational menu. We saw the home page. We have a tutorial that was suggested and then developed by one of the grad students who was involved in this project because she was a TA for the Introduction of Soil Science course, and she observed that students, novices, who never saw a soil profile before in their life, don't even know how to approach a soil profile and how do they go step by step in terms of identifying key features and then describing them and then finally classifying the soil. So she prepared a brief tutorial, which is posted under this tab. We have an about page that talks about how this particular project came about. I only have a snapshot of this page that talks about the history of the soil monolith collection at UBC, which started in way back in 1940s, and it really took off in 60s, and it took 4 decades to complete. It includes, I didn't mention that, so besides soils from BC, also examples from Yukon and Alberta. And then we have a resource page where you have several links to other soil monolith related websites, including those that provide videos and information of how you can go about creating soil monoliths on your own. As I said, this is a relatively new project that we completed about a year ago, and we launched it in term one of last academic year. So far, it's being used in the Introduction to Soil Science course, and these are all UBC courses listed here, which is a second year course at UBC. Also, it's used in forest ecology course, which is another second year course. They have quite a big section on soil classification and identification. Also, we are using course in two upper level courses, fourth year courses, soil processes and sustainable soil management course that we have at UBC. And interestingly enough, my colleagues from Faculty of Forestry who offer a graduate course on below ground forest ecosystems found this educational tool to be useful for their purposes. I heard from colleagues who are on executive of a couple of professional associations and societies that something like this would be useful for those individuals who are seeking to upgrade their or brush on their soil classification skills for various professional development designations, like BC Institute of Agrologists is just one. So it does have a potential of being used outside of classrooms. And I just would like to close with a couple of comments or things that we learned from this project and several others that Kent mentioned. In order for your web-based online teaching resource or tool to be effective, you have to have specific learning objectives. You can't go and shoot without clear idea what are you developing, because as any teaching approach is not going to be effective, and that goes for the web-based ones as well. When it comes to web-based teaching tools, you have to allow lots of time for the whole process, because you can't do it properly in a short period of time. So you have to have, as Kent was saying, enough time for planning, also for development. Then you have time for feedback, and then you have to act upon that feedback to refine what you've developed, because what you think is useful might not necessarily be what students think it's useful. Also, to have a multidisciplinary team is essential, because we as soil scientists have our ideas, what works and it's what's exciting, but maybe that's not true for other disciplines. Involving students, both graduate and undergraduate, is a key, because they give you their perspective, because in most cases they are the end users and you have to listen what they have to say. This all being said, and now going after, or not after, but through about 10 of these projects like this one, I would definitely say from my experience that developing these open learning, web-based educational resources is definitely well worth the effort, and it's something that we should think to pursue. And last but not least, I would like to acknowledge numerous students and colleagues who helped, and also the funding that we got from UBC Teaching and Learning Enhancement Fund. And with that, I'm done. I have questions. Time for two questions. Yes.
Yeah. So maybe 30 years ago, we brought a computer into the classroom, and this is maybe the end of it. Are you thinking of bringing this back to the field and making it available on tablets?
Yes, that's a good point. Yes, that's an interesting comment. yes, my multimedia specialists are actually telling me this is what we need to do, and I know they already tried streamlining, I guess that's the term, some of the videos onto iPhones, because yes, that's what students are using, and this will be also modified to some extent to go on iPhones or tablets or you name it, what they are, because that's what this generation of students is using.